This is Fresh Air. I'm Terry Gross. My guest is the longest-serving actor on the long-running TV series Law and Order. She's also the longest-serving African-American actress on a drama in TV history. S. Apatha Murkerson plays Lieutenant Anita Van Buren. She started her TV career in uniform, a postal uniform, while playing the role of Reba the Mail Lady on Pee-wee's Playhouse. She received a Tony nomination for her performance in the August Wilson play The Piano Lesson. Murkerson recently walked away with 3 big awards for her performance in the HBO movie Lackawanna Blues. She got a Screen Actors Guild Award, a Golden Globe, and an Emmy. She played a woman who's a surrogate mother for many of the people who stay at her boarding house in the late 50s and early 60s. They all call her Nanny. She even ends up raising the son of one boarder who isn't doing a very good job raising him herself. In this scene, from early in the film, the boarder is angry that while she was gone, Nanny took care of her boy.
Nanny, we need to talk.
Yes, we do.
Just because you let me stay here don't give you no right to go in my room and take my baby.
Eileen, ain't nobody took nothing from you. You can't leave that child in the room by himself. That ain't right.
And it ain't right that you go invade my privacy.
Well, I'll invade Russia when a baby is concerned. Now, you ought to let his father keep him when you're working.
Nanny, I can take care of my baby. I'm working my ass off. Got 2 jobs, and I'm doing the best I can. I'm just down the street at the Flame, and I'm running back and forth, checking on him every chance I get. He's asleep, Nanny.
What if the child wake up? He'll be scared
Nanny.
To death. Look, because you and Reuben can't make it, don't mean the child got to suffer. Let me keep him when you go to work. That way you ain't got to worry about him, and now I ain't got to worry about him. Plus, he'll get a nice hot meal.
Nanny, I feed my baby.
You ain't got to worry about him, and I ain't got to worry about him. It ain't no trouble at all.
Ricky, come up in the Flame. Is she putting my business in the street? I know I'm a good mother.
We ain't worried about what nobody else say. This here is between you and me. Let me help you with this child till you're able to help yourself.
S. Apatha Murkerson, welcome to Fresh Air, and congratulations on your awards.
Thank you so much.
Now, I have to ask you about the things you said upon receiving those awards. For the Golden Globes, you were having a hot flash and let everybody know. And then for the Screen Actors Guild Award, you thanked your divorce lawyer. What kind of response have you gotten to your thank you comments?
Do you know, I think it's the women that have approached me. It's been kind of cool. Women of my age who are, you know, are experiencing hot flashes and changes in their lives. They feel that they've been vindicated and you know, someone is talking about an event in our lives that is happening to us now. And hot flashes, you know, are a part of my life now.
A lot of women would prefer not to talk about it and not to admit that they're at the stage of life where that's happening to them. So was it a like big decision for you to say something, or are you already just out there with stuff like that?
No, I don't see the point in holding back. I mean, because certainly someone can see when your face is flushed. And, you know, I've never had problems growing older, and that's a part of it. And you know, as I walked up to the stage that day of the evening of the Golden Globes, you know, when in excitement, that's what happens sometimes. And it just seemed the right thing to say, because indeed I was feeling like a kid, but feeling my age as well, but experiencing this moment of my age at the same time. So it felt like the right thing to say.
One more question about hot flashes. Do you ever get a hot flash while you're shooting on Law and Order? And if so, like, do you have to do another take, or is that okay?
I actually have a great story about that.
Let's hear it.
This was a couple of years ago, and when Jerry Orbach was still on the show, and it was late, very, very late. I guess maybe 1:30 in the morning or something. And we had been there all day. And it was a particularly grueling scene where there were tons of background people on the set, and the lights were blazing, and it just seemed to be taking forever. So I turned to Jerry and I said, man, if we don't get this scene, I'm going to be in full-fledged hot flash, and then we're going to have to do it again. Not realizing that we were mic'd. And the next thing we heard was action. Because they knew if they let me get to the hot flash, my face would be flushed. We'd have to pat me down and start all over. But Jerry looks at me after that and he goes, kid, this is what I think. I think every time they're running slow, you have hot flash. So it actually came in handy that time.
Now, I want to ask you about Lackawanna Blues. The character that you play in that movie is somebody who has such like emotional wisdom, and they're a maternal figure for a whole community of people. Was there ever anybody in your life who was like that?
You know, there were many women like that in my life, starting really with my mother. My mother, I'm the last of five kids, and my mother raised us alone in Detroit. And because there were so many kids in the house, there were always kids over. So my mother was sort of like the den mother for the neighborhood. She's an excellent cook. So there were always, you know, there was baking and food and things at the house. And my mother always had a really good ear. So the kids would also come to her with, you know, things that were going on with them because she was an easy person to talk to.
Now, you wore a wig, I believe, for your character in Lackawanna Blues, and I believe
yes.
You also wear one on Law & Order.
Yes.
What do wigs do for you as an actress? You know, it's giving you a type of hair that not only isn't yours, but it's a style you probably wouldn't wear in real life. So when you see yourself in that, does it change you?
You know, it allows me to focus on someone other than me, because I've always been a natural girl. I, you know, either wear my hair like in twists, or I wear it like it is now, very short afro. And you know, Van Buren, I always laugh. I say Van Buren is a sister that goes to the beauty salon twice a week, you know. And there are girls that do that, you know what I mean? Every 2 weeks they go to the salon, they get their coifs done. And Nanny was a woman who always had to look her best, because she never knew who was coming to the house. And they made the decision, actually, the producers, to give her such long locks, because the real woman had very short hair. But, you know, it's another way of looking at yourself in the character of someone, so that when I look in the mirror, I don't see me completely. I see my face, but there's something that's different that allows me to go into a character in another way.
My guest is S. Epatha Murkerson. She co-stars in the long-running TV series Law & Order. Let's hear a scene from an episode that prominently features Murkerson's character, Lieutenant Anita Van Buren. The lieutenant recognizes a young woman who was found dead. The victim is the daughter of a good friend from Van Buren's college years. The death looks like a suicide, but the police haven't ruled out foul play, and they aren't convinced that the victim's mother is telling them everything she knows. In this scene, Van Buren is visiting her friend at home.
Maybe it's for the better if this just went away.
Christine, I'm going to tell you, I'm having trouble understanding your reaction to this.
It didn't happen to you, Anita.
No doubt. But I think you know something, and you're afraid to tell me.
I understand police procedure. I understand you need to ask me these questions.
No, I'm not here as a police officer. I'm here as your friend.
Then as my friend, please leave this alone and let us heal.
He's a serial abuser, Christine. He's gonna do it again.
Not here, he won't. And you don't understand, because it's not your child at risk.
And Emily doesn't deserve more? Or are we not just talking about Emily here?
Please, just let this go.
Christine, has he made threats against Callie too?
I can't do this.
Did he call here?
Anita, I can't lose another child.
And you won't if you let me put this man away, but girl, you got to come clean.
Why are you all over me?
You remember when I was a rookie? And I wanted to quit because of all the crap I was taking on the job? Well, you said to me, don't let them beat you. And the reason I hung in was because you wouldn't let me give up, and I'm not gonna let you give up now.
The characters' personal lives aren't usually explored in Law and Order, but we do get to find out a little bit about you in this. The stories are all about solving the crime and prosecuting the suspect. What did you know about your character when you first got the part?
You know, the interesting thing is I knew nothing, and it happened quickly. I mean, literally, I got the job on a Friday, and I started working on a Monday. Because that whole thing about NBC asking Dick to bring women on happened, I believe, at the last minute. So I literally
whole thing about asking him to bring women on?
They were going to cancel Law and Order, and I think in its third season, because NBC wanted women on the show. So Dick let two of the guys go, and he brought on two women. That's how Jill Hennessy and I ended up on the show, because NBC was going to cancel it if he didn't bring skirts in. It was really that simple, yeah.
And this is Dick Wolf, the creator of the series that you're talking about.
The creator, exactly.
Was this because they wanted more equality in casting, or because
I think they wanted skirts.
Skirts for the men viewers.
I think they just wanted to bring women in, you know, because they didn't believe that the show could last without women on it. I don't think it was any, you know, really heavy thought other than a skirt, But what happened was, when the show went to syndication, that's when our demographic changed, because there are a lot of women who are at home. And then we started getting more women viewers. So with the change in bringing women and going to syndication, it really did change the demographic of the show. But when I first started, I literally just hit the ground running. I wasn't able to even talk to any lieutenants until after my first episode, because we were so busy, you know, shooting the show. So, you know, I had to sort of, and we all did. I really don't think anyone other than Dick was very clear about who this person was. And he did give me a biography of who he thought Van Buren was. And she came from a small family. There was no one in her family who was in law enforcement. It was something that she wanted to do. She's the kind of woman who shoots straight from the shoulder, those kinds of things. She was married. She had two boys. And that was sort of a basic hit the ground running. And then I had the opportunity to meet a couple of female lieutenants. And the interesting thing is, when I started, I believe there were only five in Manhattan. There was one lieutenant who was so cool. When you saw her, she literally looked like, you know, someone's aunt or, you know, sweet mother. But the minute she walked into the precinct, you knew she garnered serious respect from the guys that worked for her. And it was so cool watching this change from meeting her outside, walking through the precinct, and then going to her office. And when the door closed, we were giggling like a couple of girls. Someone would knock on the door. Her whole demeanor would change. It was really interesting having the opportunity to do that.
Have you petitioned for certain changes in the character?
Yeah, sense of humor specifically, and, you know, and lower that top button, undo the top button on the blouse. We had been doing the top button for about 4 or 5 years, and I said, I think we can relax her a little bit, undo the button, you know, undo a couple of buttons, let her loosen up a little bit.
How did you get the part on Law and Order?
Well, Dick says it was because his kids were huge fans of Pee-wee's Playhouse.
That's great. So Dick Wolf, the creator of Law and Order, knew you because his kids were big fans of Pee-wee's Playhouse.
Yeah, Yeah, and he tells me, no matter what I say, that's the reason why I got the job, because of the kids. So every time I see his kids, I give them big hugs.
Well, they're probably not really kids anymore, are they?
No, they're not. No, not even.
So now on Pee Wee, you played Reba the Mail Lady.
Yeah.
And in fact, why don't we hear a short clip of you on Pee Wee's Playhouse?
Oh, you're kidding.
Yes, and this is a scene.
You did your homework.
Pee Wee has made a wish. And the wish is that Reba the Mail Lady will come to the playhouse and mail his letter. And Jambi the Genie has granted Pee-wee's wish, and you show up at the playhouse a little baffled, and you're in your nightgown. And here's the scene.
Hi, Reba.
Pee-wee.
How's it going?
What are you doing in my house?
I'm not in your house. You're in the playhouse.
The playhouse? How did I get here?
Uh-oh.
Jambi, did you put a wish on me?
He made me do it. You see, I had this letter, and I wished that you were here to mail it for me.
Why didn't you just take it down to the corner and put it in the mailbox?
Well, as long as you're here, would you mind mailing this letter for me, please, Reba?
Pee-wee. I would do just about anything for you, but today is my only day off.
All right, I'll mail the letter myself.
Thank you.
Wait, Reba. Reba, wait.
And that's my guest, Asapatha Murkison, in a scene from Pee-wee's Playhouse, and she was playing Reba the Mail Lady. You seem to be the only person on Pee-wee's show who is from, like, the real world as opposed to the playhouse world. Yours.
Yeah. It was, and I think it was like that in real life, too.
What do you mean?
What a fun, that was fun to do. It was a fun show to do.
I love that show.
Yeah, and you know, it was my first TV gig, and I used to ask them to, after the first year we filmed here in New York, and then subsequent shows were filmed in L.A., but I used to ask them to bring me out a day early, because I'm telling you, Terry, I'd get on set, and there would be something else to feast your eyes on. It was probably the most fun I've ever had on a set.
So did you see yourself in that series as, like, the rational person in this wacky world?
Absolutely. Absolutely. And I think every now and then she became a part of it as well. But you know, that was the whole point, is that Reba was sort of, you know, the real person, the person that actually had, like, a real job and took care of, like, real things. And everyone else was a little kooky.
You grew up in Saginaw, Michigan.
I grew up in Detroit.
Oh, in Detroit.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. I was born in Saginaw, but I grew up in Detroit. So that's home for me.
So what was your neighborhood like when you were growing up?
It was a pretty crazy neighborhood. There were a couple, because we, you know, whenever my mother's job got better, we would move into a different neighborhood. You could do that back then. And so it was I remember the first neighborhood I can recall was really an interracial neighborhood. Italians and Asians and blacks and whites. And just, you know, really crazy neighborhoods where, you know, everybody sort of lived in the neighborhood, but they stayed to themselves. We didn't, like, interchange and play with each other, even as kids. We did in school, but not at home. But there were, it's just these crazy people that I remember, that, you know, the kids having names for, like Crazy Louie across the street, and the two old ladies that lived down the street that would, like, cuss you out and chase you with, you know, baseball bats. But it was, like, a fun neighborhood. It sounds crazy, but it was a fun neighborhood. I had a great time growing up in Detroit, and it only changed when the world change and integration and came into play, and then our neighborhood started changing.
How did your neighborhood change?
Well, you know, I think integration actually ruined black communities, because, you know, folks who could afford to take their children to better areas and to better places for schools left the neighborhoods. And I think those checks and balances really kept the neighborhoods together. you know, because the guy who's the alcoholic knew the school teacher, you know, the preacher knew the merchants, and the lawyers lived in the neighborhoods, and every, you know, it kept our communities together. But once integration became law, then folks who could and should better their lives moved from the neighborhoods, and the neighborhoods changed.
Well, your family was one of the families that moved from the neighborhood, wasn't it?
Yeah, we actually were the first blacks in the neighborhood where I went to high school. And when I started my high school, it was only 10% black at the school. So we were somewhat pioneers in that area as well.
Was that comfortable for you?
You know, one of the things that I can always recall is my mother telling me that anything I wanted to do, I could do it. So I was never uncomfortable because I just went into school with the thought that I'm going to get everything I can out of it. I didn't fear too much. I just kind of went and had a great time. And I found myself in that position lots of times where I was maybe one of few or the only black student. But the point for me was to be educated, and because I knew that was important.
Did you go through a radical period in college?
I think I went through that in high school. It kind of hit me in high school because all those things were happening when, you know, King and Malcolm's assassination and Kennedy's assassination, both Kennedys. I mean, all of those were a part of my upbringing, a part of my formative years. And so I think I became a radical in thought very early because of the things that I saw in front of me.
Did you go through an activist period before acting?
I think my acting is activist. I think what I choose to do speaks of who I am and what I want to be perceived as, the kind of person I want to be perceived as. My mouth has gotten me out of jobs more times than not for speaking up on things that I thought were improperly written or that I thought were derogatory. So I think that my work is activism, and so whatever I do, I try to do it in a way that I will be proud of when I look back on it.
Can you think of an example of a line that you, or you know, a scene that you wanted to change because you thought it was derogatory?
No, you know, I've done like 13 seasons of the show, and there have been times, it's one of the things, so I have to tell you, Terry, it's one of the things that I appreciate the most about Law and Order, because we don't always see eye to eye, but one of the things that I always appreciate is that my voice is heard. Now, whether it is taken, that they take heed to it and change it, and more times than not they do, it's important that you speak out. Otherwise, I don't think I could continue to do it. What I know about when we sit down at script meeting is that I lived in a culture all of our writers have not lived in. They've never been a woman. They've never been black. And they're not in their 50s. Do you know what I mean? That's a very specific thing right there. So there's texture that we bring into those script meetings because of who we are, because we're different, because we're not the same, because our cultures are different. And I think that's important. And I think the most important thing that happens on this show is that my voice is heard.
Have you ever turned down roles because you thought they were stereotypes?
Yeah. And I think that's another reason why it took me, you know, so long to get a lead in a movie is because, and it's just for me. I can only speak for me. you know, I can't speak for other people. If it's something I don't think is good for me to do, I can't begrudge someone who does it, though I wish they wouldn't. But I can't begrudge them because people have lives. They have children. They have mortgages. You know, there, maybe their issues are different than mine. So I have to speak as one person for Ipeitha. I'll speak loud, but I'll speak from my point of view and not for anyone else.
I want to thank you so much for talking with us. Thank you.
Thank you for having me, Terry.
S. Ipeitha Merkerson plays Lieutenant Anita Van Buren on Law and Order. She won an Emmy, a Golden Globe, and a SAG Award for her performance in the HBO movie Lackawanna Blues.